You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the 1871 podcast, and our special guest, I'm delighted to say, for this episode is former Reading defender Linvoy Primus. And to give you your official title, Linvoy, it's Linvoy Primus MBE. So we're honoured anyway as a football legend, but I don't know, Johnny, if we've ever had an MBE before, have we?
I don't think so.
No.
First, Linvoy, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
It's an honour. So, Linvoy, thanks ever so much for joining us, and a warm welcome to you to the 1871 podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm well. Just, it's the end of the season in a different way for me because my work works around football season. So, but I can't nip off on holiday to Dubai like the boys and stuff like that. I just stay at home and think of them on holiday. So a little bit quiet, but all well, all's good.
Yeah, and it rains sometimes out in Dubai, so you never know.
That's true. Probably it's like mist that there, right? It's like mist in the air.
Yeah, that's it.
That's probably more like it.
Used to live at that, but it's hot and sunny most of the time, to be fair.
Mm, good. But,
Linvoy, before we speak to you, just want to let our listeners and our viewers on YouTube know about our guest coming up on the 1871 podcast. So tomorrow we've got former Reading midfielder and model John Halls. So that's tomorrow. And then on Tuesday, thanks to Johnny's sterling efforts, stroke being a stalker, we've got the former Reading winger, Glenn Little. So we're looking forward to that one. Potentially that could be a long episode because he likes to talk. Yeah, we're looking forward to that one. And we'll also bring you a bonus episode when eventually Reading announce their new manager. We don't know when that's going to be. I think we said on one of the episodes recently, Johnny, that there was some sort of announcement that if you bought a season ticket, you could meet the manager on June the 2nd. But actually, we've reread it. We think what it means is that if you buy your season ticket before June the 2nd, you get to meet the new manager at some point. So it doesn't mean that he's definitely coming in before June the 2nd, because we thought that might have meant that they know who it was already. Anyway, you're probably confused, so I'll move on. talking of managers, at the time of recording this episode, the new favourite, we seem to have a new favourite every day. So at the time of recording this, the new favourite is former Celtic and Leicester assistant manager Chris Davies. So Chris was Reading's youth team captain. Unfortunately, his playing career came to an end very early. I think it was 19, due to an injury. So he's a former Reading first team coach, and he worked with Brendan Rodgers. He was Brendan Rodgers' assistant at Leicester. So he's apparently the new favourite. Whether we take any notice of that or not is a different story, but that's the inverted commas, the news today. And a bit of news about the 1871 podcast. We're now up to 58th place on the Apple Football podcast chart. So I don't know what's going on, we haven't got a marketing budget to invest in social media, but I'll tell you what we do have. We have some brilliant guests, and we've got one today, Linvoy Primus. So before we speak to Linvoy, just a word about Dylan. He might be joining us. You know, we don't know. He might be joining us midway through this episode. We never know for sure what's going on with Dylan. But if not, hopefully he's joining us for tomorrow's episode. So an update on him and Marumo Gallants in South Africa. So they had their CAF Confederation Cup semi-final on Wednesday, the second leg of that. So that's kind of the equivalent of Africa's Europa League, that type of competition. And they had their second leg. They were losing from the first leg. Unfortunately, they lost the second leg on Wednesday as well. So they're out of the competition, but they've done absolutely brilliantly to get there. And Dylan's turned them around, and they've got a chance of staying up. Another side that he's gone in and done his Neil Warnock impression in South Africa. So Marumo Gallants have got a relegation decider on Saturday against Dylan's former club, Morocco Swallows. So if Gallants win, they will stay up. And they could stay up if they draw. But if they lose, they'll either be relegated automatically or they'll go into what they do in South Africa is a relegation playoff. So it's the team, the second lowest team in the South African Premier Division goes into that. So wish Dylan good luck with that. So Linvoy, coming to you now. Do we have to call you sir? Do we have to?
Well, if the day of the week ends in Y, yeah.
Oh, okay, right, sir. Right. So yeah. Linvoy, I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, normally. Right. You know me, just Linvoy. That'll do.
officially Linvoy Primus MBE. So an absolute pleasure, Linvoy. So you know, thank you so much for sparing your time. So you joined Reading in 1997. You were there for three seasons and then Portsmouth for nine seasons. Mm. And of course, those two clubs are playing each other in League One next season. So my first question is, who will you be supporting?
Obviously, a team that wears blue and then a team that's got white in there.
Good answer.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think the last time they played in the league. It wasn't the 7-4 game, was it?
I don't think that was the last one, but that was like the memorable.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. You know what? I forgot. You know, the leagues. Oh, hey.
There you go. We told you. Oh,
look.
Magic.
Look who it is. Hello.
Hey, nice
it's Dylan
one.
Kerr, everyone. Dylan Kerr, my lord, has joined us.
Sorry, I'm late. You know,
No problem. The fine's waiting. The boys have got a fine system for you. So
yeah. And Dylan, I don't know if you know this, but we're actually speaking to Linvoy Primus, who's an MBE. When are you going to get your MBE? What's the equivalent in South Africa?
I don't even know. I don't know if they have any. I wouldn't have a clue. Congratulations, Linvoy. Wow.
Thank you. A few years ago, I don't really think about it until it's mentioned because... you know, you just think to yourself, well, everything you do, you don't do it for a reward in such. So to actually have that, you know, awarded to me was really special. But I was unsure it was going to happen. I didn't even know anything like it could happen. So, yeah, I'm more surprised than everybody else, I think.
Yeah. Well, Dylan, you're Dylan Kerr, my lord. That's all you need, I think. Yeah. Look, Dylan, we were just actually mentioning that you might join us. We were hoping that you'd join us. So pleased to see you here. And I just literally about 2 seconds before you joined was talking about Marumo Gallants. So unfortunately, you lost on Wednesday, but you did brilliantly to get to the semi-final. So well done. And you got the big relegation decider on Saturday. Do you think you're going to do it?
The way we played in the two legs against a team that's kind of like in the English Premier League compared to us being in the, you know, even the Southeast Premier League of, you know, tier six, it's that bigger difference in club size and stature and obviously money. But Oh my God! If we could have had a striker, you know, Stevie Wonder could have scored some of our goals. No, Linvoy, honestly, he killed me. He killed me. We missed 4 1-on-1s away at Yanga in front of 60,000 people, which was unbelievable. And most of my players have not played in that environment. It was intimidating. It was noisy. And we should have put the game to bed in the first 10 minutes in the second half. Yesterday, it was slightly different. There wasn't a big crowd there. We don't really get big crowds in South Africa at the moment. But in the first half, we had 3 1-on-1s and we can't score. It's ridiculous how we missed these chances. Mm-hmm. And then they came, they sat in, they got the 2-0 lead from the first leg, and they got two counterattacks and they put the game to bed. But the way we played and for my little club, what we've done in the 21 games I've played in 90 days, and we've traveled to Libya, to Egypt, to Zambia, and to Algiers. Wow. In between all these, it's been absolutely phenomenal. And the biggest of all mother games is on Saturday, that we have to win. And if we win, we stay up. But I can't thank the guys for doing what they've done since I've arrived. And I just hope the legs for the final game will be ready. I mean, we played 3 games every week for 3 months.
Oh.
And
how do you get to train? How do you get to train in that time?
We don't.
I was going to say,
The worst thing is, the culture here is it's driven by money, you know, because obviously, you know, the families, you know, are struggling, and a player in Africa, they have to look after everybody, not just their own family, but the wives' families, and you know, they've got kids, grandkids, it is tough for these players. So every bit of money that they can get, you know, it helps, and they need it. Tuesday, we were supposed to do, you know, our final training session. The players went on strike. They refused to train until the chairman came and promised them what he'd verbally offered them, which was a percentage of the final monies that they were going to get. So they refused to train on Tuesday. It completely pissed me off, excuse the French. But because I worked in Africa, I understand why. Mm. But at the same time, you know, being English and being brought up the way I have in football, you know, I've never played for money. I've always played for to get as high and to get to the best I can be, whether it's winning a trophy or even getting to a final. And on Tuesday, you know, they were adamant they weren't going to train. And if the chairman hadn't have come Wednesday morning, signed this piece of paper guaranteeing them, you know, a percentage of the final winnings, then, you know, we would have never won. We would never even, I don't think we'd have ever played. And that's what really, really hurts me. But it did. The players gave it the best shot. They were absolutely outstanding. They went from first minute to the 95th minute. Like I say, got caught on two counters. And now we've travelled for 3 hours to come to Pretoria. We're playing Soweto on Saturday. We're not going to train tomorrow. The guys, we can't do anything. Mm. So we're going to the game with the same mentality as we did yesterday morning when the chairman came and signed this piece of paper. But again, the chairman is going to have to come to the party, as they say, and he's going to have to offer them something. And I mean, and it's got to be something that they will basically, you know, run through brick walls for. I don't like it.
It's not that's not how it was in your time at the club. And obviously you were there. We were just talking to Linvoy before you joined us, and Linvoy joined, I think, a couple of years after you left, or maybe a year after you left, something like that. And Linvoy, I want to take you back to when you joined Reading, and Dylan's talking about all the problems he's got over there. But there was a little bit of controversy when you joined Reading, wasn't there? Because am I right in saying that somebody tried to sue you over problems with an agency fee when you joined Reading?
That's right.
Was that a stressful time for you, or did you just think, look, I'm going to leave it to everyone else to sort out agents and all that sort of thing?
I suppose, when the opportunity came to sign for Reading, you know, my first thoughts were, you know, I'm going to play in the higher league. I've got an opportunity to play against Charlton again because they released me as a 20-year-old. And I'd signed up with an agency, but the agency that I signed up with, they're massive now. The way they handled me wasn't great. And being, I think I was, 23, 24. And, you know, there's a bit of you that thinks, come on, guys, you know, I'm only, you know, this is an opportunity to go somewhere and you're not doing it the right way. So anyway, I jumped out the fire, frying pan into the fire, went with another agent. And that's when going with this other agent, he didn't tie up the loose ends to move me off with the from the other end. So, yeah, they took me to court, but we settled on the steps. And it was, you know, 500 quid that they went to take me to court for. And at that point, I think I realised, you know what, this industry, it can be cutthroat from all sides. So it was a little bit controversial. But I was hoping the agent I signed with had dealt with it, but he hadn't. And, you know, a little bit, to, like Dylan says there, there's so many reasons those boys didn't want to train, because their purpose is, I want to play football, great, but my purpose is to make money for my family. So, you know, so with that frustration, you can see, you know, sometimes in football, we don't know what motivates people. So I had that in the background. It was stressful, but it wasn't over stressful because I had football to look forward to. I was moving into a new area and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about you and Keith McPherson, because for me, I think probably for Johnny as well, and many Reading fans, and don't worry, Dylan, we're not talking about fullbacks at the moment, we're talking about centre-backs. But you and Keith McPherson, I would say regarded by, certainly by many Reading fans, as two of the best centre-backs in the club's history.
Oh, wow, wow.
And obviously you went on to do really well with Portsmouth as well. You know, Keith McPherson, he was a great player as well. Same as yourself, Linvoy. What was that partnership like? And did you, you know, was there a chemistry there, or was it just about football, or how did that work?
Yeah, you know what? Thank you for saying that, because, you know, sometimes, Dylan, again, you can probably concur to this, that your career is really good when you finish playing, because you don't remember the good bits, don't you? Yeah. But whilst my time at Reading, there was a lot of things going on, so it was clouded. So my performances, I never saw my performances as being good enough, even if there were 7 or 8 or 9, 10 or whatever it was at 10, it never felt enough. So I was never satisfied. So, you know, the relationship with Macca was brilliant, because he really, I'd say, guided me in terms of the way he played, the way he spoke on the pitch, the way he spoke off the pitch. And he was a good person as a reference point, you know, to work with. And I think the understanding probably got a little bit better after we got beat 6-0 by Tranmere. Our understanding got a little bit better after that, because we both, you know, were open with each other and vulnerable with each other. I think that was a big thing, being vulnerable with each other, the weaknesses and the strengths and all of that. And that just helped us trust each other and build something. But I think the problem we had at Reading, we had a lot of injuries, a lot of players coming in and out, and we never had a consistent team. And when we did, those key players got injured again. Parky was one of them. And, you know, I remember him and Hodgie in a cup game were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Or no, Man City, I think, were brilliant. We lose 3 or 4 players just before deadline day. And you're like, oh, what next? So, but Macca, great, really good. And, you know, probably had maybe about 18 months of playing regularly together before there were changes and stuff.
Do you remember the song I used to sing about him, about Keith McPherson?
No, go on, remind me.
I'm not a singer, so.
Oh.
it's one of my favourite all-time Reading songs, apart from Dylan's song, obviously.
Obviously.
Keith McPherson. Brilliant.
Okay.
Well, not brilliant the way I sung it, but. Johnny, I'm going to let you jump in now. Go on.
Yeah. Linvoy, when I was saying you're one of the best central defenders we've had, and when you came to Reading, what was your impression of Elm Park? And that old stadium. Like, would you go there and go, what have I done?
Well, you know what? I'll be honest with you. So, obviously you've heard about Reading, but I've never been to the ground. And when we pulled up outside, it obviously it's not the same as Upton Park, but Upton Park's in between houses used to be, obviously. So when we pulled up, that wasn't unfamiliar. But then when we walked through the reception area, I thought, wow. It's a big club, but it's old because, I'm coming from Barnet and, Barnet's got nothing really. And it's old. And I remember going on the pitch and thinking, wow, the pitch is decent. The pitch is decent. And the terracing just looking around. Remember, there wasn't many new grounds around at the time. So it wasn't anything to say, oh, this doesn't look great. But I do remember this. I can't remember if we were had to do a little bit of a fitness test. I can't remember, but I remember stretching. Looking around at the advertising boards, and the first lot of boards I saw for a taxi firm, and the numbers were 6666, and I'm thinking, oh my days, is this club like something to do with the devil, or and that was my main thought. There was another one, but I can't say it on air because it won't be great. Honestly, it wouldn't be great, But the excitement, I suppose, to get the ground and everything like that, the excitement was, I'm going to have an opportunity to play a level that I really believe I could play at. But, and the dream that was sold to me about the stadium and everything like that, and I thought, cool, I could be part of something special in a number of ways. So, yeah, so it was a good feeling. It wasn't what am I going to do? It was a really good feeling when I came.
And like that first season under Terry, a bit like this season for Reading, we started off okay, didn't we? And then after Christmas, like I said, with injuries, it just kind of
fell collapsed. Apart.
And yeah, there's no other way of looking at it, is it?
No, it collapsed.
Then you had Tommy come in with the deadline day, magnificent seven, wasn't it? And then obviously to the Majewski. And then you had Pards as manager, didn't you, after Tommy left in Pards?
That's right, yes.
How was that period of transition, because you were there for the three seasons of change, really. As a player, how did that feel for you, going to the new ground in a lower league? And
that's right, I suppose the only way to describe it was it was chaotic in terms of you knew, what as a player, you never want to get relegated anyway. You want to be successful. So I knew, to experience that was horrible. I remember coming up off the pitch and just going straight into the dressing room after Forest, just in tears, because it's like, how could this happen? And then, you don't analyse too much, but I remember looking through the season thinking, oh, it's key moments, key players, could we have done this, could we have done that? And, that's after it's all done. And so when a new manager comes in, Dylan, this, the feeling of, does he want me? That's it. You don't care about everybody else. You're like, does he want me? What's his plans? Who's that coming in with him? Who's that? This sense of insecurity was huge, really, really big. And I think when Pards came back, that was to stabilise the playing side of things because he had that knack of being able to do that. But he also had a way of separating everything, them against us, and making the players believe in that. Yeah. So when he came, it felt like things were going to be good. But, I love Martin Allen, but I think his time with Pards, it wasn't great for what the club were trying to build. And I saw it quite early. I knew there was going to be a clash somewhere. It was either going to be with the players, it was either going to be Pards, it was either going to be upset. I knew something's going to happen. So again, there was this sense of instability that I no one likes anyway, but when you want to play the game of football, but you know there's lots of other things affecting it, you know, the stuff going on in my personal life as well. So with all of that mix, it was tough, but I think you grow in so many ways. I think in that area of football, I grew a lot, you know, because it wasn't just about the pitch, it was off the pitch as well.
Yeah. And Dylan, you obviously Linvoy came in not long after you left. And, you know, if you think about in the 90s, some of the centre backs that we had, so Keith McPherson, Darris Dovcek, and then Linvoy comes in. You know, what was that like, that relationship with you, Dylan, and the centre backs, you know, as a unit? Because that was great when you were part of Reading. That was one of the reasons for the success. You kind of just all seemed to know what everyone was doing, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to come back on, you know, what Linvoy said just about Keith McPherson. One of the nicest centre-backs you've ever played with and want to know. But he never used to speak to me. He never used to speak to anybody. When
he had a lot of sense then.
Well done. Save, whatever, save. You know, He was my captain and he was always reliable. And I remember, obviously, because I always kept in touch with Parky, Macca and Jiltsy. One of the things that Macca has always said is that, you know, playing with those defenders, you know, Darius and Adi and Jeff Hopkins, especially, he says that, you know, he had such a good understanding with you. You know, and Parky used to say that as well. You know, so, you know, sometimes when you leave clubs and you think, well, maybe if you've got the opportunity to stay, maybe the new people that are coming in, that, you know, you could have suited that kind of, you know, style of play which we had. And I'll never forget, you know, when I always speak to Macca, I'm trying to get him on the show, and he's that, you know, quiet and shy. He doesn't want to come on to the show, but now maybe that I've told him that you're going to be on, change his opinion. But everybody's talking about Darius being, you know, he was a different kind of player, being that, you know, European style of a defender. But, you know, we had good defenders and we had, you know, such a good understanding and such a good partnership of how we worked and how we played together and how we socialised together. I mean, it's often mentioned, you know, when we do these things with players that, you know, we go to Utopia and
that, what is that then?
What do you mean? Your picture was on the above the entrance. VIP member. I don't know with the hairstyle back in the 90s, but I think you need that. I've got 32 players at this club and 20 of them are midfield players. You know, I've got 6 defenders and I've got 4 strikers and 2 goalkeepers. You know, and defenders, you know, I've lost my 2 centre halves through hamstring injuries last night. Uh-huh. They played a striker for Young Africans. He was like Michael Jules. He was like lightning. He's literally given my centre half at least 6 meters, and he's from the halfway line, and he's beaten him to the 18-yard, crossed it and scored. And my centre half's hamstring is old. So I've got not. So it's important now. I've got 2 centre halves. One that's not played all season.
Okay.
You know. He couldn't get in, you know, because we've been really, really good with that. So I always feel that, you know, if you've got a strong back 2 and a strong goalkeeper, as we did with Reading with Xhaka, goals, you know, it gave me the freedom to go forward. It gave Andy Bernal the license to go forward because we knew we had 2 very strong defenders. And that must be important for your relationship as a central defender.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, even the names there, I forgot about Bernie. You know, he played outside me a couple of times. Well, probably half a season or so. And it is, but I remember when, you know, playing in the Prem, the season before getting to the Prem, a good friend of mine, Darren Moore, had gone up with West Brom. So he said, Lynn, he said, you play a game and a half when you've played. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you play in half your right back's game, half your midfielder's game, half your centre back's game. He said, you're mentally you're worn out because the game's so quick and people are moving so quickly. And I think if you haven't got a good relationship with the players around you, like thinking that at the unction, yeah, he's going to go in and win it. He's going to go in and win it so I can get round here. If you haven't got that, if you're like, oh, is he going to win it? It's all over. But if you've got that little feeling that, yeah, he's going to win this or he's not going to win this, it just, those key things, and you can't make that happen. It comes from camaraderie. It comes from, you know, a meal out or, you know, the Tuesday club or the Wednesday club or whatever. You know, it does come from that. It does help. It's not, you know, to do every week. You can't do it every week now. I don't think you can do it, you know, every once a month or anything. It has changed a bit, but that does really help understanding relationships with your teammates as well.
Yeah. Johnny, do you want to come back in now?
Yeah. I was going to say, Limbo, I read that when you, how was it a difficult decision for you to leave Reading? I said that issues about contracts and stuff. For
That's
you.
Right. What, yeah.
What happened? Well,
yeah. So in the turmoil of everything, so you must remember Massar. Do you remember Massar?
Oh, yeah. The famous Massar.
Yeah, Massar. We used to call him, my dad used to call him Massage. he said, because he never really performed well for us. But anyway, it's another story. Anyway, so when I signed, you know, the contract I signed when I came, it was a 3-year contract. Terms stayed the same all the way through. So when Terry left and Tommy came in, Tommy said to me, Lynn, I really want to keep you at the club and we want to change the contract for you. And I said, oh, happy days. You know, we've moved in the area and now that, you know, looks like I'm going to settle and be here for a while. Because again, new manager comes in, might want to change things. And nothing happened. You know, nothing happened. And then just before Tommy went, Pard said to me, Lynn, whatever you do, don't sign the contract. I said, but I haven't even been offered one yet. He said, have you? You know, he's let the cat out of the bag sort of thing. So I said, why not? He said, it's not going to be favourable to you. So I said, all right, then. I kept that in mind. Still nothing. Pard comes in. And you've got to remember, I played with Pard at Charlton.
Yeah.
As I was walking out the door at Charlton, he said to me, Lynn Voy, they've made a mistake. You're going to prove them wrong and, you know, they're going to see you playing and you're going to be worth X amount of money. That's the last thing he said to me as I left Charlton. We then played together at Barnet about a season and a half. I'm covering him, you know, I'm doing an extra run, you know, that didn't say any centre-halves went off with a hamstring injury. I was doing a similar thing for Pard. And then Pard's offered me a deal. Now, as manager, honestly, it broke my heart. It absolutely broke my heart. And I thought to myself, how can he do this? And I was looking it on the structure of the club now. Yeah, it wasn't on what I was just looking at. And you know, Pards said, made a couple of statements in the paper. One, he even claimed, I really wish I kept it, or we had, what do you call it at the time, phones, with camera phones, where he said, Lynn Voy is my sole Campbell. I'm like, that's it. Happy days. I'm here. I'm a lifer.
Was he drunk?
Well, exactly. Honestly, for him to go public with that, he must have been. So anyway, it never happened. And, you know, we never fell out, but I was really disappointed, really disappointed. And like I say, it wasn't for me. It got to a place where, you know, unfortunately, you know, when Tommy signed all those players, he signed a lot of reserve team players, you know, who weren't ready for football week in, week out. They were used to one game, have a drink after the game. You got, you know, 6-7 days to prepare for the next reserve game. All of a sudden, no, we're in a battle. And their lifestyle didn't change. And that really didn't help. And I thought to myself, these guys, I was looking at this thinking, you know what, football's not fair. These guys are on like double what I'm on. And you know, they're living their life like, no, I'm not having it, you know. So that's when it came to contract stuff, I thought, well, if you've got a value in me, like you say you have, then, you know, and you think I'm better than these guys here, then that, you know, do something about it. And it never happens, obviously. Like I said, we never fell out, but I was disappointed. And he then phoned me in the summer, Paz phoned me in the summer and said, what are you doing? I said, I haven't got a club. And his words were, you're too good to not be playing. I'm going to phone Tony Pulis. Now, Pew was at Pompey. So he said, and he said, I'll see what he says, but I'll just let you know that you'll be good for the squad, but I'm not sure you're ready for the first team because they were in the championship. So I don't think you'll be ready for the first team. So he said, I'll phone him and say and see what happens. Anyway, the you know, short story is, went on trial, signed the contract, and that was it, really. So, yeah, so that wrangling, it again, Dylan, you must know so many stories of players who've had promised contracts not done and all that, and sometimes you're expected to get on with it, but yeah, it comes to the point. Sorry, go on, Dylan.
After, I mean, you, a lot of people don't know that there's, with all the, you know, there's some success in football, and your career is as far as you can take it from the people that are in control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the disappointments in football, daily, having to perform at a level, having to play at a level, there is disappointments that's going to happen. But it's the ones in your control that are hard to come by. I had that similar. It's interesting, and this is why I love this show. You know, when we're speaking to, you know, former players, ex-players, you know, we get to know the insights of it because, you know, I didn't know that had happened. And like, I had the similar experience with Quinny and Jordy, you know, and I was when Mark left, you know, my contract was coming to an end and I refused to sign a contract. I went on a week to week, you know, and when I had that horrendous injury where I'd ripped my hamstring right off the bone of my arse and couldn't walk, you mind? My career was over, and Quinny popped his head round the door in the old changing rooms at Elm Park, and just said, "Well, that screwed your move to Norwich City." And I went, "What?" He says, "Yeah, we'd agreed to let you to go and join Gary Megson at Norwich City, you know." But I played in that game because I just loved playing, you know, It's when people take away what you love and what you believe in, that's the disappointing thing. And I don't think lots of, you know, football fans know that. Mm-hmm. They all think, oh, footballer, great lifestyle, can do this, can do that. You know, the sacrifices you have to make, you know, to you're away from your families a lot. You're pushing yourself through so much, you know, energy and exhaustion at the same time. You know, to be the best for that club, to be the best for that coach, you know, and like I say, this is the beauty of this program, these shows, because we're allowed to tell it how it is, because fans don't know.
And Linvoy, on that subject, if you like, obviously, you know, it was a bit of a difficult time. It was a difficult start for you at Reading with the agent thing, and you know, and then relegation and all that sort of thing. And actually, you've admitted that you were suffering from depression during your playing career. So two questions to do with that, really. So how did you find a way through that? And also, you know, there's so many people that are affected in that way, and a lot of them don't talk about it. So what was your experience? And secondly, you know, anyone who's going through that type of experience, what would your advice be to them?
Yeah, so I'd say that, you know, first off, today we've got more access to, you know, the, whether it's mental health, whether it's physical health, we've got more access now. And I don't mean this as football, I just mean this as a general thing, because the awareness of mental health is, you know, said Mental Health Week at the moment, you know, so I hope this goes out in the Mental Health Week now I've said that. So, but if not, put the date up for it. So, nowadays it's easy. Talk to somebody, speak to somebody nowadays. But back then, you're not, you can't show a weakness. there's ego in that as well. You know, I can cope with this. I can deal with this. I don't need that extra support. What can they tell me that I don't know about myself and things like that? So there was a lot of ego there. And you know, and on the outside, as Dylan said, on the outside, you have got the perfect life. You know, people looking at you, you've got the why are you moaning? Why are you down? Why are you, you know, what is going on? And then, you know, the narrative that's playing in the background, it never goes away, but you know that you have to put a 10 out of 10 performance on Saturday. Sometimes you can escape. Sometimes you can use those, the opportunity to play to escape. But, you know, what we were going through as a club, you couldn't really escape because you knew that if you didn't perform well and you didn't get a result, you know, again, it's like we're getting relegated and that's going to make the fans unhappy. And, you know, your neighbours are Reading fans and, you know, or your neighbours an Oxford fan laughing at you and stuff like that. So, you know, so it was all going on. And again, you put on a front, you put up a face, and we do, you know, naturally men do anyway. Yeah. But I think in that pressure cooker of sport and specifically football, you can't tell the manager not feeling great today. You know, no, can't tell him. You know, nowadays you can. Like I say, there's more of an acceptance, more of an understanding, more of a place, a safe space to speak. So I think nowadays, I'm just doing a course at the moment in regards to like with counselling with sports people. But one of the things that, you know, is highlighted and it's so obvious that, you know, that we're all human beings and we've all got gifts in what we do, you know, but the outcome of what you do shouldn't hold so much on your life that it crushes you or cripples you or restricts you from being who you should be and play and stuff like that. And there's some really good things that I've been reading that, techniques are in place to remind, you know, the sports people that there is a bigger picture here. You know, you're going to do what you do every day, but look at the bigger picture. What's the bigger picture? What's the bigger picture in your life? So to be able to offer that advice now, I feel, you know, is something that I would really recommend, but not just for sport. This is for everybody.
What was your bigger moment?
My bigger picture moment was... This is going to sound bad, but I don't mean it to sound bad, right? When I left Reading, that was my bigger picture moment.
Not first.
No, it was when, so Trish, my wife, was unwell as whilst at Reading. Again, kept it all quiet. When we moved to Portsmouth, one of the things we realised that we were lonely. As a couple, we were lonely because we couldn't really make friends in and around. We lived in Didcot. So it was a real commuter place. We'd been brought up in London, even though it was a commuter place, we still had enough life to do stuff, but it did cost nothing. So loneliness. So we decided, right, we're going to try and make friends, you know, at Portsmouth. It took us about a year, and the friends that we made were churchgoers. And I said to my wife, you could have picked anybody apart from churchgoers, you know. Oh, I've got to go to church with them and stuff. No, I think we'll go near church. And anyway, we ended up going to church with them. And for the first time, I heard a message, I guess, about life beyond football, life beyond Linvoy. And I started to ask myself, who is Linvoy? You know, and that's when I started to ask those questions about me, the answers started to come in such a way through the Bible, through conversations with friends. My friend Darren Moore, you know, a Christian, used to ask him questions. And like this conversation we're having, you're finding out things that you wouldn't necessarily know at the time. When we traveled away, Darren and I would have these same conversations and we could be open and honest with each other. And that's when it hit, you know, that's when it hit. There's a number of other things. And at that point, I'd say that's the point when I realized, you know what, faith needs to be something that I've not heard about that belongs to me. And I went on this journey, explored Christianity. And in the end, you know, just made the decision that, you know, Christianity is the way I think I need to live. And that was it. Didn't think nothing more of it. And then, you know, within 2 years, set up a charity. I've traveled to 2 countries to do work out there, like with orphanages and stuff. And that was the bigger picture. You know, that was, it was like football meant something, but I tell you what, that's even better. So when I came to play football, I enjoyed it so much more because I knew it, my life didn't rest on the result where it did for 8 years, 8 to 10 years before.
Yeah, and Linvor, your daughter plays for London City Lionesses, doesn't she? So your experience from your playing days and your, you know, as they call it, your journey, how has that helped you sort of, because it's an interesting one, isn't it? You're a dad, but also you've got that, you can relate to her playing football. How has all that stuff that you've, you know, all those experiences, how has that helped you as a father and supporting her playing football, all that stuff?
Yeah. It's been hard, you know. It's been hard to watch it. What I mean by that is my daughter, she's done very well. You know, she's going off to the World Cup in July to play for Jamaica, which would be lovely. She's in a group of death, though. She's with France, Brazil, and somebody else. It's like, oh, 7 days, could be back. So anyway, but...
Don't tell her that.
No, she knows. She knows. The whole team knows, don't worry. When they were hoping that France would stay on strike, because they went on strike, the players, not too long ago. She was like, oh, please let them stay on strike. So they sacked the coach, so the players all came back. But yeah, so, like I say, it's been hard because... What I've realised, you can talk about your experiences a lot, but until you go through it, you can't, I want to say you can't avoid it. You have to go through something. So she got told by, when she was 18, 19, she got told by Chelsea that they were going to let her go. Similar sort of experience to me. So what I said to my wife was, I think let's give her a week to be upset. Let her be upset. Let her be angry. Because if we say it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right every time that don't make you feel better. But if she's got to, you know, she's got to vent and vent and vent. So 7 days, you know, in our heads, right, that's it. So we just said to her, right, look, it's bad. You know, you're disappointed. But what are you going to do? You've got to do something now. So, you know, so she says, right, I'm going to America. Like, what? You know, so she went on the 4-year scholarship in America, best thing ever. But that I never ever stopped grieving about being released from Charlton until I was 29, when I realized I had a bigger purpose than just playing football, you know. So that was something that we were able to say to her. She doesn't know that that was the process we were thinking, but that was the thing we could bring to her. And there's other things, obviously, like performance, you know, getting left out of the team, contract negotiations. You know, I'm sitting there thinking, my days, why do these clubs do this? Yeah. Just be straight. You know, just be straight. So all of that. But the thing, she has to experience it. I don't like it. But, you know, I was in the car with my son yesterday and I was so... wanted to tell him, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. I thought, I can't. He's got to do it, isn't he? He's got to do it. So, and that's what it's like with my daughter. I realised from a young age, when she was about 10, I'm not going to tell her how she can play football because I got it full throttle back. So yeah, very passive in the way we deal with it. Yeah, so that's you know, a couple of the ways to deal with it. You know, my friend describes sport as 4 funerals and a wedding. You have more down days than up days, you know, and those days you have a wedding, you celebrate hard because you don't know when the next wedding's coming.
That's Tuesday night at Utopia, was it?
Oh, Tuesday. I didn't do Tuesdays. I've done Friday night. I went in with glasses, big moustache. You wouldn't know it was me.
All right. Johnny, Dylan, do you want to?
I was just going to say there, Linvoy, perhaps the Jamaican team, they can do a remake of Cool Runnings. in the World
Cup. That, you know what? That would be brilliant. That would be so good. At least we'd know we'd be there longer than a week. So,
boy, if they made that version of the film starring, you know, someone representing your daughter, and you appeared as the dad, who would play you in that film?
Oh, good question, Denzel.
Oh, there you go.
I was thinking that.
Really?
What? And horses.
What's that?
From Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah. Nice. I'm not bringing it down.
Linvoy, it's just like when you're talking about mental health there and back in those days, you know, issues back then, the world's changed a lot, hasn't it? And seeing what you're doing with the, you did the wall in China as a walk. Mm. I do walks over in England for mental health. You wouldn't fancy joining us for one, would you?
What do you do? You do what?
We do some mental health awareness walks with Reading. Different
brands.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. So if you fancy teaming up for one.
Superb. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll be
get the old legs out. You don't know.
You know what? My legs will probably be all right. It's probably my back that wouldn't cope in the end. So, but you know what? No, seriously, that would be a good thing to speak about afterwards because, you know... one of the things I do, and I'm not over-promising here, I do some, mentoring with the scholars at Reading. And I can't remember who oversees the whole group, but I'll say it's ABS. With ABS, we've been talking about different things the players can do, though that group of players can do, that, you know, heightens things. And I think, personally, relationships... like with, because they're in a group already, and there's the peer groups are in that. But I think relationships with around football, but men outside of football, but around football, so they can get a taste of and see real life as well.
Yeah.
So I definitely, yeah, we'll speak about it afterwards. I'd definitely be up for doing that. Get me walking boots out.
One last question for me. I just have to ask this. You've had Chalk and Cheese as manager, Pulis and Redknapp. What was that like for you as a player?
Very good. Yeah. Pew was, you know, set in his ways. You know, it wasn't going well, wasn't going right, set in his ways. And you knew it was bad because him and Milan used to get on really well. Milan Mandry used to get on well. And when Milan used to fly in from America, he'd go straight to the ground. Like if we were away, he'd go straight to the ground and Tony used to drive him back. So I think we played Stockport away and it's awful, honestly, awful, bad, bad, bad performance. And Tony got in the car, just drove off and left Milan at the crowd. Milan's like, hey, Tony, where are you? It's like, no, I'm not coming. Didn't even answer. Harry, like nearly the opposite, nearly the, not really relaxed, you know, not really relaxed. But very much what you saw with his eye was what you're going to get, you know. And tactically, you know, there were a few games against the bigger teams where tactically he got it right. But most games he'd say, go on, lads, out and play. Give him the ball. Just give him the ball. We had a lad on loan. I'm not going to tell you the wages, right? He had a lad on loan from, I can't say because, anyway. To justify his wages, right? We were Portsmouth for playing it, paying the wages. To justify the wages, Harry had to play him, obviously. But I'm not joking. I've never heard a team talk where we have to pass the ball to this player so much. Whatever you do, pass it to him. Whatever you do, because if he looks busy on the ball, he's worth the money, isn't he? And he's saying, give him the ball. Anyway, this lad got injured in a warm-up, like a few days later, because he couldn't handle it. And we got in a little huddle. We'd never done a huddle before. It was like, right, keep him out of the team. Let's win today. And we went and won, and he never played again. Yeah, so Harry was the one. And, you know, he never called him a wheeler and dealer, but he did bring a few players in. He did. Some you turn up and you go, what's he doing here? Didn't he just win the Champions League? You know, it's so funny. So many coming in.
Dylan, have you got a last question for Linvoy?
No, listen, you know, I apologise, Linvoy, that I was late. You know,
no, it's fine.
We just arrived, and by the time I got into, you know, I basically live out of a hotel room at the moment because we've played that many games. Nice to see you. It's great to, you know, that smile's worth $1 million anyway.
So, yeah, thank you. You
know, and like I said, we've all got good memories at Elm Park, you know, and obviously you have at Majeski. We have ups and downs. It's as the saying in Scotland, it's all swings and roundabouts, you know, in football. You know, it's great to see you looking well.
Thank you.
I'm glad you've still got your own hair, although maybe...
Well, I'll take it off once we've finished. It's a Lego head.
No, but you're looking brilliant. I mean, you're looking brilliant. I mean, that smile.
Thank you.
That smile. If I could give that smile to my players on Saturday, we'd survive relegation. But, you know, it's been brilliant to see you. You know, it's been a long, long time. And
Very long time.
I'm honoured. I'm just happy to be with Johnny and Mark doing this, because you catch up with so many memories, catch up with so many stories. That's what it's all about. And
yeah.
When Mark keeps saying, "Oh, can you do this? Can you do that?" We have in South Africa something called load shedding, which they cut the power off for 4 hours.
Yeah, that's insane. Earlier, yeah.
So, you know, it's always good when I can speak to him. We're supposed to be doing one at 6 o'clock. I've got no chance. Load shedding. So go to a bar or a restaurant, but it's too noisy.
Yeah, so, of course.
No, brilliant to see you, and I'm glad I'm glad everything's going well for you. And
Thank you. Where
are you living now?
Still down in Portsmouth. Still there. So yeah. Well, I'm seeing Jilksy next week, hopefully.
Oh, make sure he gets to the bar. He's one of these things. He's allergic to going near bars.
Oh, is he? Has he got that invisible shield up? Can't get through. It's bouncing off it.
I'm hopefully going to come home next week. I'm going to spend some time in Reading. But Vinny Allaire keeps asking me to come down.
Oh, you know, does he? Yeah, Vinny. Oh. Well, that's for another episode, I think.
before we finish, I've got to... When I joined Leeds, when I left South Africa, Vinny was coming to the end of his contract, and Howard didn't fancy him. He didn't, and we had a team photo, and Vinny was left out the team photo, and we're all sat there, we're all doing his hair, we're all getting looking good, we've all got the white on, and everybody's sitting. Next thing, Vinny's gone into the office, and he's bought some white overalls with a paint can and a paintbrush, with a, you know, with the paint out this way.
Yeah.
I say, am I in your way, guys?
He's a good guy, isn't he? He's a great guy.
Everybody just cracked up. And we couldn't take the photos for about 5-10 minutes because everybody is one of them was really just walking around the ground while we're all getting lined up. You sit there, he's... where do you want the paint? Where do you want the painting? It was
good guy, brilliant. Well, all the best of the weekend.
Thank you, Dylan.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Dylan. Always a pleasure, and thank you to Linvoy. Really appreciate you being a guest. Really enjoy speaking to you.
No problem at all. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
And just a reminder: the guest coming up tomorrow, we've got former Reading midfielder and model John Halls. Tuesday, thanks to Johnny's hard work and activity as a stalker, we've got former Reading winger Glenn Little. And eventually, when it happens, we're going to be bringing you a bonus episode when Reading announce their new manager. We don't think it's going to be Dylan. You know, could be, who knows. But
well, don't know. He's back next week.
We'll see.
Hint, hint.
He's coming back next week. Maybe he's not telling us why.
Yeah, he said he's in Reading. Yeah, come on now.
Yeah.
My odds are 1,500 to 1. I'll let you know.
Just get a bet on it.
Dylan Kerr's been spotted at the Oracle. So anyway, thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Dylan. And thank you to our special guest, Linvoy. Sports Social Podcast Network.